So it is May 17th, 2020 in South Africa over Zoom, and we're looking at Bhagavad Gita chapter 15. So I'm going to share my screen. Okay. Oops. Okay, can you all see just one slide, just the slide of Srila Prabhupada?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So we're going to be studying today a kind of little whirlwind tour through Bhagavad Gita chapter 15. And we can analyze this chapter. You could analyze it in, you could analyze it in different ways, but the banyan tree analogy in text 1 through 5, transmigration of the soul in 6 through 11, how to see Krishna in the world in verses 12 through 15, and the summary of the Vedanta Sutra in verses 16 through 20. So in the first verse, Krishna is comparing the entanglement in the material world to an upside-down banyan tree. Because the process of bhakti includes detachment from the world. And the fact that the tree is a reflection indicates that there's real variety in the spiritual world. So there's what we see here is a reflection of variety. But a materialist cannot get out of this tree because they get lost in it. And Krishna says that we have to gain detachment through gaining knowledge of the real nature of the world. He says, the branches of this tree are extending downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. This is text 2. The twigs are the objects of the senses, and the tree has roots going down, and these are bound to the fruit of action of human society. So here we see it's reflected on desire. We have to cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Now, detachment, we should know, by this point in the Bhagavad Gita, does not mean aversion. So it's not that I hate material life or I hate the material world. In fact, later on in this 15th chapter, Krishna will explain how he's present in the material world. Someone has to mute themselves. Somebody has to mute themselves here. I don't know who that is that needs to mute themselves. Okay, so this detachment is a freedom from both attachment and aversion, the neutral position of witness. And we have the downward branches going to the roots of fruit of activities, the upward branches, which are the heavenly planets, the fruits, which are religiousness, economic development, sense gratification and liberation, the twigs, which are the sense objects, taste, sound, smell, touch, sight. And the tips of the branches are the senses. This is an allegory of a synopsis of Sankhya philosophy, which is discussed in depth in the Bhagavatam in the second and the third canto. Now, this genuine detachment, again, it's not an aversion, and it's achieved through hearing about both the real spiritual world and the actual nature of the material world. And this hearing is effective only if we hear from someone who knows, and only if we first surrender to the people we hear, which is the result of engagement in bhakti. And Krishna says we can't know the real source of this tree. It's very entangling. But we must know it to become free. So how do we don't know it, but we have to know it to become free? And what does that mean? It means we can't know it through our own endeavor. There's no science or research or meditation that's going to allow us to really understand the nature of the material world. But if we hear from the right source, can be revealed to us. So Srila Prabhupada makes this statement of the Urdhva Mula. Mula means a root. Urdhva means up. The root is up. And Prabhupada said, just like if you have to keep yourself, the legs are up and the head down, somebody keeps you like this, how long you will feel comfortable? If somebody takes your legs and catches you, your head down, then it is not very comfortable. So this whole material world is like that. Urdhva Mulam. The Mulam should have been down, but it is up. Therefore, it is uncomfortable. So this is one of the many analogies or allegories as to why in this material world, no matter what facility we get, you know, you find these people, they get a lot of money, fame, they're beautiful, they're talented, and they're like, is this all there is? Is that all there is in life? They're still not satisfied because there's something basically wrong. We're backwards. And here's a class Prabhupada gave on 15.1. He said, we have got experience of the Urdhva Mulam on the bank of a river or the bank of a pond. The tree is standing, but the reflection, the same tree. So that is not real. The reflection is not real. The real tree is up. So in the same way, real enjoyment, real varieties is in the spiritual world. Here it's a reflection, it is not fact. So our enjoyment here is called maya or illusion. And the example that's given throughout the Shastra is of a dream. So we all have experience in dreams that we enjoy or suffer different things. Maybe some criminal is chasing us. Prabhupada always talks about a tiger chasing us. I never had a tiger chase me in a dream. I have had people chase me in a dream with a gun, although that's never happened to me in my waking life. And we may enjoy things in a dream. I've dreamt that I was eating or going to some beautiful place. And something is happening in a dream. There's some electrons firing in the brain and so forth. But it's not a real experience. And I always give the example of how one time on a fast day, I was fasting from food and water, and I took a little nap. And in my dream, I was eating all this prasadam and pakoras. And then I was drinking water, and I drank, you know, a whole glass of water. And then I drank another glass, and another one, and another one. And finally, I took a huge jug of water, and I was drinking the whole jug. And then all of a sudden, in my dream, I said, there's something funny here. Why am I still thirsty? And I woke up and said, it's dream water. So in the similar way, although apparently we seem to have all of the rasas in this world that exist in the spiritual world, we have reverence and serving and friendship, romantic love, parental love, they don't satisfy us. We're like, I have beautiful children, I have a wonderful partner, I have good friends, but still I'm not satisfied because it's not the ultimate reality. And Srila Prabhupada points out that this reflection is resting on desire, and that we'll see a little bit more as we go through this chapter. So Krishna says that we have to cut down this tree with the weapon of detachment. So there's a very famous story about Alexander the Great and the Gordian knot, that there was this knotted rope, and the story was that anyone who could untie this knot could conquer the world. So many people tried and they all failed. When Alexander came, he tried to untie it and he failed, and he just took a sword and cut the knot. So we can try to unentangle ourselves from this world, but that's not possible. We'll be, you know, we can do past life regressions and forward life, whatever, and we can do science and we can do everything to try to become unentangled, but it won't work. Prabhupada, in his purport to 15.3.4, he says, to get out of the entanglement, we must surrender to Krishna, which automatically detaches us. So our detachment from this world, again, it's not an aversion, and it's not simply being an observer, but it's having a strong attachment to Krishna that naturally detaches us from the reflection. When you have real fresh orange juice, you're not going to want to drink a chemically flavored, you know, watered down, sugared orange drink. Yes? And then we go on to Bhagavad Gita 15:5. This is a very wonderful verse. Here's the translation, one of my favorite verses. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. So after Krishna has described this banyan tree, there's a reflection, then the reality, cut it down with the sword of knowledge. We had an axe. Cut it down with detachment and knowledge. Now he says how to do that. This is how to surrender to Krishna. And Prabhupada gives us an order here. To give up pride and the desire for honor. That's done by understanding our own position. Then we can give up false ideas of ownership. Right? If I don't want anyone to say how wonderful I am and how clever I am and how accomplished I am, then I can give up my idea that I own anything here. From that platform, I can gain positive spiritual knowledge that I can realize that I'm a soul. And from that platform, I give up any interest in material happiness and distress. And from that platform, I can fully surrender to Krishna. So this is how Srila Prabhupada says it in the purport. Give up the pride of importance, then false proprietorship, then false identification with family, society, and nation, then spiritual knowledge, then freedom from duality, then full knowledge, then surrender to Krishna. Now, whenever we have an order like this, you know, first do this, and then do this, and then do this, we may think that the progress of spirituality is very linear. But because we're really dealing here, or mechanical, you know, first you have to be able to count your numbers, and then you have to be able to add, and then you have to know, you know, what fractions are, then you have to be able to find common denominators and equivalent fractions, and then you can add fractions of unlike denominators. You know, we may think it's like that, that there's one thing building on another, but we are talking about a personal relationship between ourselves, the soul, and Krishna, the Supreme Soul, the Atma and the Paramatma. And that relationship, like any relationship, it develops in its own personal way. So although these step-by-step instructions, and there are many different step-by-step instructions given by Srila Prabhupada, by our acharyas, in the scripture itself, in many places, at the same time, we cannot put our advancement into some neat little box. And, well, I can't surrender to Krishna because I still think I'm part of this family. You know, we can be preparing to surrender to Krishna at least. And the spiritual knowledge that I'm not this body can become part of our understanding and surrender to Krishna. But this is a very interesting purport and certainly deserving of a week's seminar to go really deeply into the logic. That why is Srila Prabhupada giving this particular order? What does each step in this order mean? I mean, this particular verse, 15:5, and then this particular purport are extremely deep and definitely worthy of a lot of care and attention, which we don't have the time to give it today, but it's definitely full of extraordinary depth. Then I always like this statement in 15:5 purport. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And this is very much related to the concept of false proprietorship. So what is ours? What is ours? And what I'm going to invite all of you to do is in the chat window, each of you just write, what do you think is ours? What belongs to us? If everybody could write in the chat window, what do you think belongs to us? We'll just take about a minute. Okay, thank you very much. So we have a pretty strong consensus here that what belongs to us is our ability to choose, our desires, our relationship with Krishna. That belongs to us. That's something that is always mine. It's mine to do with as I like. Everything else is not mine. I mean, even my mind and body and mind and the intelligence on the material level is not mine. But my ability to decide, what do I want? Do I want to surrender to Krishna or to Maya? And what kind of relationship do I want to have with Krishna? That's mine. And, of course, I give that voluntarily to Krishna. I voluntarily give to Krishna my will, which, of course, ironically then, gives me freedom. When I give my will to Maya, I become bound. And when I give my will to Krishna, I become free. So this is verse 5-6. So now one may ask, well, if I do the instructions in text 5, where will I go? And then Krishna is describing what is the reality. He's described the banyan tree, how to cut it down, what's the nature of Maya. Now he's describing his reality. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by sun or moon, or by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So there's no need of sunlight or moonlight or fire or electricity. Everything is self-effulgent. So here's from a lecture on 328, 21, and 75. Prabhupada says, what is this foolishness? Why should you pay the electric bill? Go there and live there. There is no need of. Natad basayate. It is the spiritual world is not lighted by the sun, moon, because everyone is effulgent. Every planet is effulgent. So therefore there is no need of these things. There is no ignorance. There is no scarcity. There is no material condition. No miserable condition. Now, of course, we have descriptions from our acharyas of the Astakalila Lila of how there's different times of the day. There's different forests. I'm working with one devotee now on books about the different seasonal forests of the spiritual world. So there's a winter forest and a summer forest. Although there's no rotating planet and there's no sun. But it's the reality of which this is the reflection. So if Krishna wants a beautiful full moon in a dark sky, he can do that. If he wants a brilliant sun in a light sky, he can do that. But there is no need for any moon or sun. And Prabhupada, in the purport of text 6, this is one of my favorite statements. One should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. My personal belief, I haven't done any research on this, is that many of us who come to Krishna consciousness and who stay in Krishna consciousness do so because we are captivated by the idea of the spiritual world. And we can refer to this wonderful, wonderful purport 1-8 in the Bhagavatam. The need of the spirit soul, Prabhupada's using the word need, the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desire for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. So when we give Krishna our will, yes, Lord, I will do whatever you like. As Jesus said, not my will, but thy will be done. Then we get freedom. Otherwise, 15:7. Right? Mama Ivam So Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, Mana Shastra Indriyani, Prakriti Stani, Karshati. This is a very key verse. And this is what happens when we don't surrender. We're a little fragment of Krishna. We're a little fragment of Krishna. And when we don't surrender to Krishna, when we give our will to illusion, oh, we are struggling with our senses and mind over and over and over and over and over again. Now, of course, we are part of the complete whole. Referring to the Isha Upanishad, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnat Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasishate. This fragmental part doesn't mean we're broken. We're eternally a part. Like something like we're part of our parents, or the sun molecules are part of the sun. So there's no meaning to sun without sunshine. And there's no meaning to sunshine without sun. And it's not that the particles of sunshine are broken. So there's a lot in this chapter, which we don't have time to get into today, but there's a lot in this chapter about how our eternal original position is to be in the spiritual world in a relationship with Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada gives some hint here in this purport about how we've come to the material world because we have misused our independence. That liberation means we get a spiritual body. And Prabhupada says in different parts of this chapter that we revive our spiritual body or that we're given a spiritual body. There's a lot of contention among scholarly devotees in ISKCON. You know, is the spiritual body awarded to us or is it revived? And the answer is both. So here, Srila Prabhupada is using this word, revive. He revives his spiritual body. Yeah? And he can see the personality of Godhead face to face. That's in the purport to this verse, text 7. So it's something we're reviving. Vive means to live. We're having it live again. My understanding is that our spiritual body, our relationship with Krishna exists. When we're in a state of illusion, it exists in a dormant state, but it's always there. It doesn't go away. All right, well, we were kind of going back and forth here. We found out what happens when we surrender. We go to that place where there's no need of the sun, moon, or electricity. And in this text 7, Krishna has been explaining about how instead we're struggling with the senses and mind. That Srila Prabhupada in the purport is talking about not just our material struggle, but about our spiritual perfection. So it's not just in this body. As we go on to text 8, Krishna says, the living entity in this material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, like the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So here we have in chapter 15 an expansion of what Krishna said in chapter 8, yam yam vapi sram vabam. Whatever we're thinking about at the time of death is where we go. And of course, what we're thinking about at the time of death depends a lot on how we've lived our life. So in the next verse, 9, Krishna says, the living entity thus takes another gross body. Thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped around the mind. He thus enjoys a particular type of sense objects. So according to our mind, we get senses that fit it. Something like we have a gross body now, and you know we get clothing, so I have this clothing that fits my body. So in a similar way, my body is fitting around my mind. And we see that even in this life, sometimes you'll see husband, wife, after so many years of marriage, they start to look like each other. Perhaps you've seen that. Or this man who looks like his dog. There's even contests, you know, who looks more like their dog. Or Srila Prabhupada would say that if you want people to admire your naked body, You can take birth as a tree. Right? My mother used to love this poem when I was growing up. I think that I will never see a poem lovely as a tree. So people are admiring the form of the tree. And in the next verse, text 10, Krishna says, the foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. So, at least speaking for myself, before reading Srila Prabhupada's books, I believed in karma and reincarnation, but I didn't really understand it. I mean, not that I can say now I really understand it, but I didn't have a grasp of it that was applicable to my life. I didn't really make sense of it. And after reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then I could see, oh, we're all getting what we desire. And once we understand this, once we see, oh, I'm getting what I desire, everyone's getting what they desire, this karma and reincarnation is all perfectly arranged so that everyone's life is exactly according to their activities and their desire, then so much of what goes on in the world makes sense. Now, when Krishna says, one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this, the implication, as Srila Prabhupada discusses, is that we need higher guidance. We're not going to be able to understand these things just through our own speculations or our own research. I mean, there's a lot of people, of course, who research near-death experiences, spontaneous reincarnation remembrances, you know, hypnotic reincarnation remembrances, so many things. But it's very, very hard for people to understand how transmigration is taking place without hearing from higher authorities. And the next verse, he says, the endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. Now, it's interesting, Prabhupada's translation here is the endeavoring transcendentalists. So we may not be perfect in transcendental realization. We still may be just endeavoring, but we've understood that I'm a soul. We've understood that I'm the soul. And Krishna says, we can see all this clearly. But then Krishna says, those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, although they may try. So in the previous verse, we were looking at the fact that we need superior guidance. And in this verse, we are told that we need to engage in some sort of yoga practice. It's not just a matter of gyan, we could say, but vigyan. So it's not just, okay, I've heard this philosophy from Srila Prabhupada, I've heard this philosophy from my spiritual master, and now, you know, I got it. But it's also a practical realization that comes from taking up a bona fide process of yoga. And I'm sure we all have experiences like this. I mean, I remember very soon after moving into the ashram and starting to chant 16 rounds and get up for Mangal Arati, of going out to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books and the airport in Chicago, in O'Hare Airport, and just seeing, factually seeing, wow, that's happening according to the mode of passion, or that's, and I remember being at a train station and being able to tell, oh, everybody is in so much anxiety, they're just radiating anxiety. So once we're in a yoga process under the guidance of superior authority, we can understand this not only intellectually, but we have practical realization. Now we have a wonderful, wonderful few verses, just 12, 13, 14, 15, four verses in this chapter, about how we can elevate ourselves in yoga so that we can experience these truths that Krishna has just given us. What is a yoga practice? And this is the last place in the Bhagavad Gita where we'll find this sort of description. It also exists in the 10th chapter, the 9th chapter, and the seventh chapter. And in fact, BBT Africa is in the process, we hope, of publishing a book that a devotee, Kamalasita, and I have written. And it's interesting, in 25 minutes, Kamalasita will be hosting me on the Vaishnavi retreat, where, and I'm sorry they're closing it to men, but not my decision, where we're going to be giving a seminar about how we can see Krishna in the things of the world. And there's these four verses in chapter 15 that contribute to that. So there's a lot in the Bhagavad Gita in four chapters, again, 7, 9, 10, and here in 15, as well as a lot in the Bhagavatam about how we can realize Krishna in our day-to-day life, how we can meditate on Krishna, how we can be conscious of Krishna through the normal activities of our life. Because if we try just to meditate on Krishna in the spiritual world, if we try just to meditate, you know, on the real banyan tree, but the problem is we're in the reflection. So we want to meditate on the real banyan tree. Undoubtedly, we want to meditate on Krishna's activities in Goloka. At the same time, I need to be able to meditate on Krishna's activities in this reflection. So in verse 12, he says, "The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me, and the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me." So depending on where you are in the world right now, where I am right now, it's 11:34 in the morning, and my room here is filled with the splendor of the sun. If you have an artificial light that is a kind of fire, the splendor of that light, and we can think about, and for some of you it may be nighttime, you can think about the splendor of the moon. I remember, I'm pretty sure it was with Mahalakshmi who's on this call, that we were walking, seeing the moon reflected on the ocean. That might have been in the Canary Islands. Is that right, Mahalakshmi? That we saw that? Yes, she's saying yes. So Mahalakshmi and I were walking on the shore of the ocean between the Canary Islands and Africa. And it was this big moon. I don't know if it was a full moon, but it was reflected on the ocean water, and it was just sparkling like diamonds on the water from the moon. And it was just amazingly beautiful. We can think of the splendor of fire, how we're just entranced by that fire. So if we can take just a few seconds here and become aware of whatever light is in our immediate environment, and the splendor of that light, the effulgence of that light, the beauty of that light is Krishna. And to become conscious of Krishna in that light. Then in the next verse he says, "I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon, and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables." So Srila Prabhupada explains that the flavor of everything is Krishna. That without the moon, there's no flavor in anything. Many years ago, about 40 years ago, I used to have a garden. For 10 years, I had a garden. And when you're growing vegetables, you know, locally, organically, and the taste of the vegetables is astonishing. All the different flavors of the vegetables. Right? How amazing. From the same light, from the same earth, how is it that eggplant has a different taste from a pumpkin? You know, totally different texture, different taste from a cucumber, from peas, and all these different flavors. And especially when you grow things organically. I was reading the other day how there's this man in Japan who grows these strawberries, no joke, 350 British pounds for one strawberry. And then he has lower grades, you know, like 50 British pounds for one strawberry. And people eating these strawberries, they say, "What a flavor." You know, what a flavor, and that they're willing to pay 350 British pounds for one strawberry. And I was thinking about the flavors in the heavenly planets must be something like that, what to speak of the flavors in the spiritual world. But even on this planet, we're able to get these astonishing flavors, and they're coming, Krishna says, from the moon. So those of us who grow things, we grow according to the moon. We plant in different phases and signs of the moon, so that the different influences of the moon will affect our... I'm getting a message from Kamalasita about when I'm going to be ready. Okay. And the different flavors of the moon affect the various tastes. So whenever we're eating anything, and this goes on to the next verse, verse 14, where Krishna says, I'm the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. So this is a very natural and easy way to meditate on Krishna while we are eating. Right? We can meditate on my ability to digest. We've all had experiences, I would guess, where we didn't digest so well, and we were very aware of that. And times when we digested everything wonderfully, but there's a fire, there's actually a chemical fire, there's an oxidation going on where we are digesting our food, and that fire is Krishna, the air of life. So when we eat, the food gets pushed down from our mouth into our esophagus. It does not go into our bronchial tubes. There's a little lever that closes when we swallow, so that the food won't go into our lungs. It gets pushed down into our esophagus, gets pushed into our stomach. Then from there, it gets pushed into our stomach. There's a little like door. Then out of our stomach, there's another door, and it's pushed into the small intestines. Then from our stomach and small intestines, it's pushed through the bloodstream to every part of our body. So here you see, there it looks like they're eating some sandesh, or maybe they're having some idlis, and we see they're having a birthday cake. And that's all turning into, you know, our hair. So, you know, my hair a few days ago, it was sandesh. They have really good sandesh here where I'm staying. But that sandesh, you know, it turned into my nose, right? And the chapati that I ate, you know, it turned into my fingers. Why? From this fire of digestion and from Krishna pushing the nutrients through my body. All right, now Krishna goes from physical ways that we can remember him to mental, right? Physical to mental. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivisto matasmatir gyanam apohanam cha vedasya sarvam aham eva vedyo vedantakrit vedavit eva chaham. So, in my family, whenever we lost anything, we would always chant this verse. Because Krishna is saying, I'm giving intelligence, mata is intelligence, matir remembrance, gyana is knowledge, apohanam forgetfulness. So Krishna is giving me knowledge, intelligence, and forgetfulness, so he can tell me where I left my keys or where I left my phone. So one time when I was traveling, a devotee had lost something. I think she lost her phone. And I said to her, just chant 1515. So she starts walking around the room going, 1515, 1515, 1515. So Krishna knows what we want, right? He knows what our desires are. And he's giving us the intelligence to achieve our desires. He's letting us forget our sufferings and difficulties. Yes, Prabhupada nicely explains in 2.4.11 Bhagavatam purport. He says, we always should ask the permission of the Lord to act or eat or speak. By the blessings of the Lord, everything done by a devotee is beyond the principles of the four defects typical of the conditioned soul. So this is our awareness, you know, my digestion, my intelligence, my ability to see with the light, all of this is from Krishna. In this way, I become Krishna conscious And I can understand the truths in the beginning of this chapter about the nature of illusion and the nature of the material world. Now, also in 15:15, Krishna says, Vedanta Krit Veda Vit Eva Chaham, that as Vyasadeva, he compiled the Vedanta Sutra, and he's about to give a summary of the Vedanta Sutra. So we're understanding Krishna in the world, in my digestion, in my mind, in my intelligence, in my memory, in my forgetfulness. And now we're going to understand Krishna transcendentally. And this wonderful statement here in the purport, the Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. He is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. My dear friends, this is a wonderful thing to meditate on when we don't feel God is all good and all merciful. In those moments of our life, to go back to this. All right, now we're going to have the essence of the Vedas described in the next three verses, which are referred to as the Tri Sloki Gita, 15, 16 through 18, where Krishna says there are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. So this is Sambandha Gyan, knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. It's going to be in text 16 through 18. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. So this is text 17. So there's conditioned souls, liberated souls. There's a Lord above everyone in text 18. Because I am transcendental, both beyond the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. Really encapsulated. Encapsulated. There's us and there's God. In the material world, we're fallible. We're prone to the four defects. That means us, too. It doesn't just mean, you know, those karmis over there. I make mistakes. I'm a cheater. Hard, right? Isn't that hard? I mean, none of us want to say we're a cheater. I really like in Shrimana Siksha, text 8, although I am a cheater, I have a wicked heart, I'm a cheater. I'm a cheater. I make mistakes all the time. My senses deceive me all the time. I am illusioned. I am fallible and across the board. And then there are beings that are infallible. And Krishna is not fallible or infallible. He is inconceivable beyond everything. So this is the Tri Sloki Gita, fallible, infallible, above, who is transcendental, the Lord. Now we go on to Abhideya. How do we understand? What's our process of attainment? Now we already went through a process of attainment. We have to hear from realized persons. We have to engage in a process of yoga. And a simple way to engage in that process of yoga is, I am the light of the sun and the moon. I am the splendor of the sun and the moon, the splendor of fire, fire of digestion. Move with the air of life, the moon that supplies the juice of vegetables. I give knowledge, intelligence, remembrance. Simple process of yoga. And here, Krishna is encapsulating this. Abhideya is, whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is a knower of everything. And the purport, Prabhupada said, goes back now to this idea of hearing from authority. Submissively hear from the Bhagavad Gita that all living entities are subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we know the purpose of the Vedas. It's so simple. It's so simple, yet Bhagunam Gyamanam Ante, it's taking, at least for me, so many lifetimes to understand these very simple things. Whoever you are, fallible, infallible, please mute yourself, whoever's making noise, we are all subordinate to the Lord. Whoever just joined and sounds like they're on the highway, please mute yourself. This is again Abhideya, the process of attainment. Very, very similar to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10.8. Bhajanti Mansarva Bhavena Bharata. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata. Right? It's very much like Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartate Iti Madhva Bhajante Man Bhuvra Bhava Samanvitaha. Yes? Know Krishna and then serve him. If I know that I'm subordinate to him, I know his glories, naturally I want to serve him with love and devotion. And then we come to Prayojana. What is the goal? This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, Anaga. And it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. Isn't that what we want? We want all of our endeavors to be perfect. Good luck, materially. You know, in the 16th chapter, which we're just coming up on, how Krishna will tell how everything is useless for the demons, that everything is thwarted, everything is bewildered. But if we want our endeavors to know perfection, that does not mean that everything will come out exactly the way we intend. But it means everything will connect us with Krishna and fill us with satisfaction. Prabhupada in this purport says, in this chapter, the first 5 verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of heart. And the rest of the chapter, from the 6th verse to the end, discuss Purushottama Yoga. And the weakness of heart is the desire to lord it over the world. And then once we have the desire to lord it over the world, which Prabhupada says in this purport, is what brings us to this material world, then the rest of the weaknesses of heart are our feeling of possession. You know, my children, my body, my home, my fishermen friends. This feeling of possession. And the purport, going back a little bit in this chapter to 15.6, as long as a living entity is in this dark material world, he is in conditioned life. But as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky, by cutting through the false perverted tree of this material world, he becomes liberated. Then there is no chance of his coming back here. In this conditional life, the living entity considers himself to be the lord of this material world, but in his liberated state, he enters into the spiritual kingdom and becomes an associate of the Supreme Lord. There he enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, and full knowledge. So, thank you for being with us through this run through the 15th chapter. And we have just a very few minutes, 3-4 minutes, if anyone has questions or comments. Any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna devotees, any questions? Wow, there's no questions.
No questions at all? So does that mean that everything was unclear, or does that mean everything was clear? You never know. There's something in the chat? Okay. How can we understand the living entities in the spiritual world are infallible? They never make any mistakes. Of course, there's loving mistakes, like the gopis put their clothes on upside down. And Krishna sometimes tries to milk a bull instead of a cow. But everything they do is perfect. In material consciousness, everything I do is imperfect. Everything I do is tainted by selfishness and exploitation. But those who are in the spiritual world, everything is perfectly motivated. There's no question of anything being imperfect. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Yes.
Can the soul ever function independently of Krishna? It seems as if it's either serving the senses in the material world or serving Krishna in the spiritual world. Is there any path where the soul exists or place where the soul exists independently of Krishna and has its so-called freedom?
That
is this freedom?
Is the curiosity in question that brought us here. That's it. Hey, is there any way I could function independently of you and still have my freedom? Is there some way I could do that? No. I'd like to know. I mean, it seems like there must be some way. I'm part of you, you know. You're independent and you're free. And I'm part of you. It must be some way that I can function independently and be free. No. Is it at all possible? Well, you can imagine that it's possible. You want to try that? Yeah, I'd like to try that. And here we are. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.